following is an unrehearsed interview with Mr. John O'Call by Mary Jane Sharp for the Kentucky Oral History Commission. The interview was conducted in Lewis County on July the 12th at 2:30. Okay, Mr. O'Call, can you give me some personal background, where you were born, when you were born?
I was born in this house that I live in right now, in Lewis County.
Oh, okay. Did your parents own the farm?
My grandparents owned
it. Grandparents, okay. So you were basically raised on a farm then?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Can you tell me some things about... Well, first of all, how big is your farm, and what's your main crop that you raise? And
well, the farm is 50 acres, and I guess the main crop would be tobacco, although I do have cattle on the farm.
Beef cattle?
Yes, ma'am. Uh-huh. We have 15 head right now. And our tobacco base is about 2,500 pounds.
Do you farm all that yourself? Or
no,
do you...
I have a tenant.
You have a tenant?
Raised the tobacco for half of the crop.
Uh-huh. And does he live on the farm?
I live on the farm.
Okay.
He lives on another farm.
Okay. Now you're also a teacher and administrator, is that not
yes,
right?
Ma'am.
Can you give me some background as to...
Well, I was a math teacher at Goldsboro High School for 15 years. And then I went up to Garrison in 1967. I was principal there for 10 years. And 6 years ago, I moved to Lewis County Central, where I'm principal now. It's advanced working.
Mm-hmm. Principal over all 12 grades?
No, it's 1 through 8,
one
K
through 8.
Through 8.
K through 8. Mm-hmm.
We have about 950 students.
Uh-huh. So you're really, I guess, what some people would term a part-time farmer?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Let me go back a few years with you here. Can you give me some information about the early years on your father's farm here in Lewis County? What all did you have, for example, chores to do, or can
you kind of describe
the farm life for me?
When I was a youngster, my dad farmed with horses. We had four horses, and one of my jobs was to go out and round up the horses in the summertime when he wanted to use them. And he plowed the ground with the horses, and then he used two-horse cultivator to plow the corn. He raised corn and tobacco. He used one horse to plow the tobacco, one horse plow,
uh-huh.
But he used a two-horse cultivator for the corn.
Uh-huh. Can you give me some information about, thank you,
you're welcome,
some changes that you have seen over the years?
The greatest change in farm life over the past 30, 40 years is mechanization of the farm. Now, you hardly ever see any workhorses here in Lewis County. Mostly, the farmers use tractors to till the soil, do the farming. I think that's probably the greatest change. And then another change that I've noticed is that since the war, nobody has any time for anything. Back before that, people have time to sit and talk to one another. If somebody came along and you were farming, you'd stop and you'd rest in the shade for an hour or so and talk to this person. But now, people don't do that anymore. They just keep right on going.
Has that been an advantage for the farmer, the mechanization, or
it's been an advantage as far as production, crop production is concerned. But if you think of the humanitarian value, we might have lost something over the years.
Do you weigh that to be more important than?
I think the humanitarian value is very important.
Yeah. So you would say that's the biggest change you've seen over the years then?
I think that's the biggest change.
Yeah.
Mechanization of the farm.
Are you married?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and when did you marry?
We were married in 1952. Married 31 years.
And always lived on this farm?
I lived up in Ohio 1 year out at first, and then we came back to the farm.
Have you, since you've been married and on the farm, have you always had tobacco and beef cattle, or? Did you ever have a dairy, for example?
Well, when my dad was working in farm, he had dairy cows. He milked cows, so milked Carnation. About 30 years ago.
But you don't have any desire to go into dairy farming?
No, I don't. I don't have time to. Nor the desire.
Nor the desire. Let me ask you a little bit about, you said you raised tobacco. Can you give me some comments about, first of all, some of the changes that you have seen in the growing of tobacco, the methods that have been used, and what did you use, for example, when you were a boy on the farm?
Well, mostly when I was very young on the farm, we set the tobacco by hand, and then later on we started using tobacco setter, two-horse setter. And then, of course, nowadays, use a setter. My tenant uses a two-row setter, which is pulled by a tractor. He sets two rows at a time. It takes four people to operate the setter, and one person drives the tractor. And then one of the greatest changes in tobacco raising over the past few years, in my opinion, is the use of the sucker control. About years ago, we spent days and days suckering the tobacco, but now, with the use of the sucker control, that takes care of it.
What about things, I know in, well, I really don't know personally, but in raising tobacco, it seems to me it's a more costly adventure today than it has been in the past when you consider the cost of equipment and this sort of thing. Can you give me some idea about the, first of all, the selling price for tobacco? It's risen over the years. Has it been dramatically
yes.
so?
Oh, or? Yeah, it's been. That's been a dramatic increase in the selling price of tobacco. I can remember when we sold tobacco for 7 and 8 cents a pound. And of course, last year it averaged about $1.80. Uh-huh. And correspondingly, the cost of production has increased also. A tobacco canvas now is about $60 or $70. And years ago, it was about $6 or $8.
Uh-huh.
But I think by and large, the tobacco farmer is still better off than he was.
Today he is?
Oh, yes.
What about the I'm sure that you're probably well aware of things that have been on the news of late about people who are, their farms are being foreclosed on because of the high prices of farm equipment and this sort of thing. What's your feeling about the increase in the price of farm equipment, fertilizers? I know that no one really likes it, high cost of living, that sort of thing, but is it difficult to be just a full-time farmer today, in your opinion? Can anyone make it?
Well, I think the size of the farm has a lot to do with it. If I think if you have a 50-acre farm, you cannot afford to go out and buy all this high-priced equipment, new equipment. I think if you do that, you probably wind up in the red. But if you have a farm that's large enough to justify buying the equipment, I think you can make it. Of course, I think it's a bad thing that the small-time farmer can't make it anymore, but I guess that's just one of the facts of life we have to face.
Do you place blame for that anywhere? Do you blame the government for any of that, the fact that the small-time farmer can't make it today, or do you blame cost of living, or?
Well, I think it's probably just the price we have to pay for the higher standard of living we have. I think the government's been good in the tobacco control, for example, coming back to tobacco. I think if we didn't have this poundage control on, that people who could would raise acres and acres, and a small-time farmer would have even more difficult time than he has now of making it.
So you really think that some of the things the government has done has actually been beneficial for the
farmer? Yes, I think so.
Let me go back to something you mentioned a little earlier about one thing that has faded from the farm life. The humanitarianism, I think that was a word that you used. Is there any way that people in our society or the farmer in general can get that back, do you think? Or has the mechanization ruined it?
I don't know whether there's any way of getting it back or not. I think that many of our, well, as I said before, I think it's one of the prices we pay for progress. I think that it would be very difficult to get back to the humanitarian values that we had 40 years ago. I don't know whether it would be possible or not. I think it would be difficult if it is possible.
Do you think that, what's the advantage of being a farmer?
Being out in fresh air. And being away from the pollution of the cities. I think it's an independent life in a way. I think that most people would say you can, you know, work when you want to, and when you, if you don't want to work a certain day, you can take off without having to answer to anybody, although if you take off too many of those days, you'll be answering somebody. But I think a farmer wants to take off a day now and then to go shopping in Cincinnati or Lexington or go to some cultural event. He can do that without fear of somebody criticizing him for it.
Do you think being raised on a farm has been a benefit to you personally in terms of your own principles, your attitude toward life?
Well, I think it has. I think there's a certain degree of independence that a youngster acquires by being reared on a farm, and also I think that he learns the value of hard work and the so-called Puritan ethic. I think it's easier to learn this on a farm than perhaps it is if a child is reared in the city and doesn't have any work that he can do. I think that sometimes it might be harder for him to learn the value of work.
Let me, since I find it interesting that you're a school principal, and how has the educational institution reacted to the farm community here in Lewis County? For example, our students in the high school, maybe you would be aware of this, do they have days that they can get off, that students can get off to go home and help the family in the tobacco fields, or is that a legitimate excuse for?
It's not legitimate, but the schools find it a little bit easy to overlook it sometimes. Students stays home to help cut tobacco. But, I mean, our school law doesn't recognize this as a legitimate excuse for missing school.
But it is, there are a number of, I'm not, it's not certainly just in Lewis County, I've seen it now in various counties that I've gone, that young people, you know, because of something you mentioned, the Puritan ethic and the hard work, they do go home right after school to work in the field, or they take off a day when the tobacco needs to be cut or when it needs to be put in or whatever. And
many of them do, yes.
Yeah. It's part of here, getting that work ethic that they're brought up with. But as an administrator, a school administrator, you can see that point.
I can see the point, but I don't have that problem very much because I only have K through 8, and not many of my students stay home working in the back room besides my school in Banksburg.
Yeah. Do you have children?
I have 3 children.
Well, do they help on the farm, I would suppose?
No, they're not farmers. They helped on the farm when they were growing up, but our oldest child is a son. He just graduated from the University of Louisville Dental School. He started his practice today at Vanceburg, and our older daughter is going to be what they call an administrative counselor at Eastern Kentucky University this fall, starting August 1st. And our younger daughter will be a senior in high school this year.
Well, it seems to me that you have three very successful children. How would you account for that? Do you think raising them on a farm has added to their...
Well, I think rearing them on a farm helps. However, I think the opportunities are found in the school system. Especially the opportunities today are found in the school. And if my children, I think they're being reared on a farm and learning the value of work, I think that probably helps them to succeed in school. But as I said, I think that's where the opportunity is. Mm-hmm. They couldn't have done what they've done had not been to school.
Okay, let me ask you a little bit about, you live, I would say this is considered to be a rural area. I'm sure it's considered to be a rural area. What about country stores and the mail service? Is everything pretty conducive to your needs? Are stores, I think for the farmers, this isn't a direct personal question here, but a number of times the farmers need to run accounts until the tobacco check comes in or something like this. Do you find the country stores to be conducive to your needs in that way?
Well, I've never done that. However, I know that some do. I think the country stores, I guess you might count them. I believe they do.
And the mail service is adequate?
Yes, mail service is adequate. Now, you asked a while ago about changes. I've noticed changes in the country stores over the years. The time that I was speaking of a while ago, 30, 40 years ago, people would sit around in stores at night, especially on Saturday night. It would be a sort of a social time for them, and they don't do that anymore. That's been eliminated.
Uh-huh. Well, have you seen a big change from the small country stores to the larger supermarkets?
Yes.
Has that occurred in your area?
That's occurred. However, we do have still some small country stores, but they're not they're not exactly the same as they were back in those days.
Yeah. Back in those days, it was probably a place for recreation. Today,
It was a place for socializing and talk about your neighbors.
Yeah.
Like
What about we've seen changes in, or so you have discussed, some changes in recreation and socializing and the workforce within the mechanization, as you mentioned. Is good help hard to find today?
Yes, I'd say it is. I'd say it's harder than it was years ago because of the different welfare programs and social programs that we have. We found up school. We've had these dropout programs, NYCs they're called. And now we have an in-school program. Some of these kids can do just as well if they don't work. They can have just as much spending money as they can if they do work. And I think for that reason, sometimes it's a little harder to find good help. Another change, I might go back to this, your other question there, Robert.
Sure.
Another change on the farm, I can remember, I'm old enough to remember that when only a few people around this area had radios, and people would gather into their houses at night and listen to the radio. And of course, one of the greatest, one of the greatest factors of change in the last 30 years has been the television system, because it's taught behaviors and shown behaviors that people didn't, they may have seen them before, but they didn't see them as often as they did on the television set.
Does your wife help with the farm work?
Not very much. My wife's not much of a farmer. She's a housewife.
What about, and this isn't here again, I'm not taking a poll or anything like that, but what do you think of some of the elected officials, not only in your county here, but I'm talking about statewide and nationwide? Do you think they have the farmer's best interest at heart, or do you think they're out to get the farmer overall?
Well, I think that elected officials have the interest of their particular constituents, and I think sometimes they don't worry too much about the greater outlook on everything. I mean, I think that the senator of North Carolina will push tobacco. I mean, he'll be for that. And he won't worry too much about soybean production or corn production.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to a person who'd been, who was a representative. He isn't anymore, but he was a representative here in Kentucky. And I asked him what he thought of his term in Frankfort, and he said, it's all a joke. It's all a joke.
Hmm.
I won't give his name.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. Here again, something I'm sure you're aware of, it kind of, I guess, goes hand in hand with the mechanization you mentioned, and that's urbanization. You know, I think over the past 100 years, America's gone from an agricultural society to a technical society. Do you feel like people are trying to squeeze you out? Do you feel like urbanization is?
No, I never felt that way. No, I don't feel like that at all. I think one of the factors caused the urbanization is the automobile. I mean, the mobility of the American people. Being able to go from where you live to someplace and back in the same day, and then also being able to move so easily from one state to another, or from the rural area to the city.
If you had to give advice to young people today who wanted to go into farming, what would you say to them?
Have a rich father.
Have a rich father. Would you advise him to do it? You think that's a good idea?
I wouldn't advise anyone to do it unless he had somebody to back him. And I mean, that wasn't exactly a doctor's remark there. I mean, I think it is good to have somebody who's behind you, a father or grandfather who can furnish a life support system, a financial support system. I think if a young man nowadays graduated from high school or college and went out and bought a farm, went in debt for it, bought the farming equipment, and bought everything that he needed to go into farming, I would sort of doubt that he could make it. I would sort of doubt that he could.
Yeah.
Unless he had a lot of luck.
Yeah. Looking back over the years, what was the worst year for you in farming? Were there any droughts?
The worst year I had was when we had a windstorm come through and destroy our tobacco crop. We didn't cut a stick that one year. I don't know what year it was, but we were on, at that time, we were on the poundage program, and we were able to make it up in subsequent years. So that's one reason that I advocate the poundage program.
What year was that? Do you recall?
No, I don't know. It was, it was in probably in 73. Yeah.
Early 70s?
Early 70s. About 73, maybe.
And that was the worst year that you can recall.
That was
relatively recent.
That was the only year that we ever failed completely on tobacco crop. We didn't sell pounds that year.
Uh-huh.
Now that's when I was renting it. You see, I raised the tobacco a few years myself, but this was after I started renting it to this other farmer.
What do you think the future is of tobacco in Kentucky?
I think the future is slim for tobacco.
You give it so many years, or?
Well, I wouldn't know that, but I think the government, we missed the government a while ago, and I think the government's helped with tobacco, but now Congress, many of these congressmen and senators who are not very helpful with the tobacco program, and you know, we're writing this message on the cigarette package now, this be dangerous to your health, and maybe it is to some people, I don't know. But I think with messages like that on a cigarette package, I think the other senators are saying, well, how are we going to support this if we're saying it's dangerous to the health of our people? And I think it'd be hard to justify that if that has been proved.
So if indeed that happens, there'll be a lot of farmers in Kentucky to either go out of business or be hurting.
I don't see any other way unless there's some alternate crop that could be substituted. And if there is one, I don't know what it is.
You also mentioned back, I think as you were growing up, your father had horses.
He had horses.
Do you still have horses? Or?
No, I don't like horses.
You don't like? You just don't like?
I
thought maybe there was a reason.
I had to run them down when I was a youngster. It wore me out.
And how many acres is your farm?
50 acres.
50 acres. One last thing I'd like to ask, and if there's anything you'd like to add, that's certainly fine also. Couple of things let me end with. First of all, if you had it to do over again, would you still stay with the farm and do everything the same?
I'd probably stay with the farm because I enjoy living on the farm. I'd stay with it. Of course, it's not my main source of income by any means.
You might take a few minutes to think about this, but what's your philosophy in life? Do you have a basic philosophy that?
Well, as I mentioned before, the Puritan ethic is, not an adequate philosophy. It's a good philosophy for work, but we go to church, and I believe that one's life ought to regard his creator, ought to regard God, and his fellow man. I think he should try to be a good neighbor to those around him and all of him and associates. As far as life on the farm, I think there should be some hard work, but I think also there should be some recreation and time away from the farm.
This is side two with an interview with Mr. John O'Call, discussing further changes. Okay, Mr. O'Call, let's talk about the first television set that you remember in the community.
First television set that I saw was up in one of the stores in Tolesburg. In fact, there were two stores which acquired television sets about the same time. One of them was Bud Schultz's store, and the other one was owned by a proprietor whose name was H. Grayfield. And on those early television sets, the screens were about 5 inches in diameter, I guess. And the television set was very heavy, and there were about 3 different programs that I remember seeing. One was wrestling, and number 2 was somebody riding a unicycle. Number 3 was Milton Berle. Those were the 3 different kinds of programs that I saw. Then the next set of television set I saw was up in Morehead University, when the chemistry professor had up there in the laboratory. But I was telling Mrs. Sharp that I can remember when our house was wired back in 1940. However, we had a radio before that time. It operated with an automobile battery and some dry cells. And every so often we'd have to take the battery out and charge it. We listened to Amos and Andy and Love and Abner and some of those other programs like that. We had our first radio in 1936. It was an airline that came from Montgomery Ward.
Hmm. Are there any other, you know, I can't imagine anything, as I said a few moments ago, being without television and much less electricity, as you mentioned, things that I'm sure take for granted. Any other big changes that you can think of?
Well, I can tell you one.
Either dealing with the farm, your farming labor, or in your home?
Well, of course, we have running water since electricity came around. We have the water pump, and we have running water in the house and bathroom. But another thing that I might recall is we attended Tozer Christian Church, and back in the 30s, we had electric lights there in the church, and they were operated by what was called a Delco system. We had a little gasoline engine back there in a little building behind the church, and when we went to lights, we'd go out and start this engine, and it had a generator on it to generate electricity for the lights.
About what year are you talking about?
Well, that was in the 30s.
The 30s.
And then REA came through here in, I think, 1940.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when most of the houses were wired at that time.
It was generated when it came around. Three decades. And water storage.
Do you recall when the Extension Agency Service came in to...
I don't recall that. I don't recall when it came, but it was here a long time. Who was that county?
Are you referring to me?
Yeah, I had the lump on it.
Mr. Newt?
Yeah.
Don Newt's father was the first, but I don't know.
What was his name?
I was trying to think of his name.
He's the first one I remember, Mr. Newt. He's the father of Don Newt and Mason County. But I don't know what year it was.
Was that... a big help to the farmer at the time?
I'd say it was helpful to the farmer, yes. It was because the extension agent not only had information at his fingertips, but he also could point the farmers to extension services of the university and what all the universities or the University of Kentucky had to offer to the farmers. And before that time, before the extension agent came, the farmers didn't know what all the services were offered. So I think it was very helpful to the farmers.
Okay, thank you very much again.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Good.